Welcome, everyone, to the Justin Ryan Bizarro Show. I'm Justin Bizarro. I'm your host. That's B-I-Z-Z-A-R-R-O. For anyone who wants to find us, you can find me on Threads, Facebook, and Instagram at Justin Bizarro. Again, that's B-I-Z-Z-A-R-R-O. I'm your host, as I said. And you can find this show or all the other shows we do on Spotify by just typing in my last name. Again, that's B-I-Z-Z-A-R-R-O for anyone who's out there trying to find us. So, with that being said, I have a very special friend. We've known each other for about, 7 months now. What a blessing to come into my life with who you are, the times we've hung out, the Wu-Tang clan stuff. We love that shit. I always love it when I have people that are interested in the same type of music I am and understand the entrepreneurial journey and things like that, and we're going to get into that on this episode. So, from Queens, New York, I'm going to introduce Bruce David of Mufasit. Just like Mufasa, for the audience. And we're going to jump right into it. Again, Mufasa, that's my favorite part of the movie, where the hyenas are all scared every time Scar says Mufasa's name. But anyway, but it's Mufasa with a T at the end for anyone looking it up or interested. Bruce is building this company. We're going to get into it. But we're going to get into Bruce's background a little bit and his story. So, Bruce, tell us where you grew up. Take as much time as you want. And let's sort of talk about your story, some of the life lessons you've had that have led you to where you are now.
Sure. Thank you so much for having me, Justin. It's a pleasure being on the show. Beautiful day. Hope everyone's out enjoying this beautiful Friday. We're going to have some good chat, I say. Just a quick correction. It's Mufasit, the pronunciation of the company. And I am a partner in Mufasit, but we'll dig more deep into that. But if anything, I'm stand by Way of Nature. That's what where you in the near future you'll be able to find me at when it comes to some of the business endeavors in the food space and things of that nature. Way of Nature, but yes, it is Mufasit. but how are we doing today?
I'm doing real well. Life is good. It's crazy thunderstorms where I am. But wow, life is good. I can't complain. A little tired here and there. But, you know, that's part of recording. You're my fifth episode of the day across all the shows. So it's always a marathon. It's always keep going. Don't slow down. Hit the gas, as we were talking about before we got started. So I'm doing pretty well. How about you?
I'm doing good. I can say New York definitely is due for a downpour to cool off. It's a hot day in the city. These last few days have been very steamy. But, overall, it's been great. After this, going to just kind of, chill out for the weekend, get the weekend going. But, yeah, I was definitely excited to jump on a call with you and just speak on, what's going on so many different outlets, So, yeah, I'm here, man. Any questions you have, I'm definitely open. But, like, real quick, just to, you put out there, I'm from Queens, New York. Yes, born and raised in Queens, Flushing to be exact. Native New Yorker. Spent a little high school time in Manhattan. So I was a city kid early, commuting at 14, 15 from the city, from Queens into the city, and just soaking up the culture of New York. Little background, my father was a DJ. Also worked for the city. Yeah, he worked in bridges and tunnels with the city. My mother, she worked in education, actually local college near me up, which I also attended. Didn't graduate Queens College out in Flushing. Jerry Seinfeld, he's alumni there, a few others. But yeah, she worked in education, so it was kind of a hand-in-hand marriage for me early on with music and also word and literature and poetry and things of that. So it was a perfect recipe, my parents, and living in New York, my experience growing up in the 90s and stuff like that. And once I got to high school, really starting to travel to the city and stuff like that and just get into different influence and exposed to so many different cultures, it really magnified my creative bug that I had going on.
And did you take the subway every day as a kid? Is that how you got yes. to school in Manhattan? Tell me about what that's like, because I don't think anyone else in the world, and living in New York City for as long as I have and doing all the New York City hospitals for 18 plus years and living there and living in Queens and Astoria, Queens for a long time and also living in Manhattan for a short period of time, I don't think anyone realizes what it's like to be a kid. I watch my ex-wife's brother or my ex-brother-in-law, like as a young kid, commute all the time. Tell me what that was like, because it's a different experience. I don't think most humans have that experience. I assume majority of humans can even understand what it's like to take the subway every day. I mean, it must have been a lot for a kid or an experience and your friends and, I don't know, you have freedom.
Yeah, it was. So, first of all, like, all my friends from middle school, they were like, you're crazy. You're going to school in Manhattan. I was accepted. The school is called Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis. It's out on 46th Street, right in the heart of Times Square. And it specializes in like international business. So I was like blessed to be accepted to the school. And like all my friends, they were going to like the local schools in Queens. So they're like, you're going to Manhattan. They're like, crazy. I'm like, nah, this is going to be great. I'm so excited. I'm like, this is going to be, you know, it's going to be the best. I'm living the city life one step closer. Because always as a kid, I'm like, I'm going to live in Manhattan when I get older. And, yeah, the first week I got a rude awakening that this was hell, this commute. I had to take a bus to Flushing Main Street to catch the 7 train at the first stop or the last stop and take that all the way into Times Square. And I would say I'm up probably 5:30 in the morning. I'm trying to catch the 6:40 something train, and I realized like no matter how early I would get up, like the train, because I was one thing, you know, they have the express train, so it'll skip a couple of stops, but that train is more in demand because everybody and their mother is going to the city at that time in the morning. So never ever get a seat until I got all the way to like Long Island City to Queensborough Plaza is when I finally got a seat on the train. But it was, that was like, I hated that part of it. And then I loved every morning when I would get off the train in Times Square and I'm just looking at all the billboards and everything going on around. I was just always just in awe of it. And then getting out of school, this was like the TRL era with, you know, Carson Daly. So and MTV, you know, they were right there. The studios were right there. So I would see Carson Daly, you know, them doing interviews from the windows like every day. So Times Square, Manhattan, all that actually, yeah, I don't think any, no more than a month, it was like played out. I was tired of it. I hated my decision to go to school there. And ultimately, I ended up like cutting school and hanging out in Queens with my friends and not taking full advantage of the opportunity I had with Onassis. But it was definitely an experience that I needed to go through, you know.
Absolutely. I don't think we realize how great the opportunity is when we're young because we don't have anything to reference it against. That's just life. Unfortunately, we don't take advantage of it as much as we should. I think that's all youth, honestly, even if you're in a rough situation or in a great situation. Let's talk a little bit about this. What keeps you going? What do you do after high school? Like, what do you get into? What are sort of the careers that you've experienced? Because you have like a lot of very New York careers and stepping stones to get to where you are, you know, and eventually if anyone listens to Justin the Food Entrepreneurs, Bruce and Christopher Lee have done 4 episodes for Simply Eggless on that show. So there's a lot there too. So we can all understand where I'm talking about, where you ended up, which is, you know, Simply Eggless and the name I can't say, which is Mufasit. And
Mufasit.
Mufasit. And, you know, I'm going to have to say it like 3 times in the mirror, like Candyman. And let's just talk about this because I think you gain a lot of experience. You have a lot of hiccups. You get into music a little bit as well. You know, if anyone listens to you on Instagram or watch you on Instagram or follows you, you know, you're a very talented lyricist as well and things like that. So how did you develop these skills? How did music play a larger role in your life? Because I do think it's important, especially if you grew up in Queens, music is such a part of the history there.
Totally. Thank you. Music is, that's like day one. That's my first love, I would say. Like I said early on, you know, just my father being a DJ, him, you know, spinning records in the house, vinyls, crates of vinyls in the house, hearing, you know, a lot of late 70s, early 80s R&B as a kid. I could think back when I was 4 or 5 years old. And I wanted to be a DJ. I wanted to be a DJ like my dad, but yeah, probably around 5, 6 years old. That's when my mother and father, they separated and got divorced. So he wasn't in the household any longer. And he would come visit, you know, but he never bought me that DJ equipment. I wanted to, like, really, you know, be under his wing and learn that. But as things progress into, like, school, and I'm, like, in school, and, you know, you have, like, have to write a poem or, you know, book reports and things like that, I would always do very good. And I remember this one time I was in second grade and I wrote a poem. I don't remember the poem's name, the context, anything. I just remember I read the poem out for my class. My teacher, she was like, this is wonderful, this is so great. She brought me to the third grade class and she's ranting and raving to the third grade teacher how great, you know, this is, and he let him perform in front of the third grade class. And the third grade teacher loved it. The students loved it. I was nervous at first. And I was like, oh, shit. I guess I'm pretty good at writing. So I figured that out pretty early. Like, all right, I can write. I'm good with poetry. I'm okay with being vulnerable on paper. I understood, like, the power in that, the power in the pen, and the music just kind of went along. So, like, as my father, like, he didn't get me the DJ equipment, and, you know, it's early 90s in New York, so much music going around. My older sister, she's 4 years older than me, so, you know, the LL Cool J's, the Rakims, you know, all the golden era hip-hop, like, she was like kind of schooling me to it. So I knew, and you know, like back in the days of rappers, they would have like the dance routines and stuff. And I was like, I was a little brother, but I thought I was like security guard of her and her like friends. They would like do their little choreography to the old school rap songs and stuff. And I would like be a part of that. So like all that, like kind of played a part. And it just kept growing more and more and more as I got older, just getting introduced to like instrumentals. I remember like the first instrumental I got where I was like so ecstatic, like I can write some music. Because before that, I was actually, one of the first ways that helped me develop like my music and my flow and stuff like that early on, I was listening to, my sister had the Biggie Smalls Ready to Die album on cassette. It had just came out. So yes, yeah, it's probably around 94 or something. I mean, I'm like 10 years old. And I didn't have any instrumentals. So I would try to write my raps like while he's like rapping over his song. Like I'm trying to write, just like kind of zone him out and just like listen to the beat. But I think me like practicing it a lot, it helped me to like, it helps me to even to this day, like I could zone things out and just go into like my zone with music. And on top of that, yeah, just maybe like, it's really just like tightened my flow and stuff like that. So that was like a process. And then from there, yeah, I got like instrumental. My friend Troy, that's somebody I started making music with. He had the Capone Noriega, the TONY top in New York. it was a single. So back in the days, you get like the clean version, the dirty version, and the instrumental, you know. And he was trying to write to it. We'd be at his house trying to, you know, write songs and stuff. And he couldn't like catch the rhythm to the beat. And he was like, yo, you keep writing stuff. So I was leaving one day and he was like, here, like, yo, you'll make more use of this than me. And like gave it to me. And I was like on cloud nine. And I remember I ran home. And at this time, my mother, she was very sick. And I remember like I told her, she was like bedridden. And I came in excited. And I'm like, I know what I'm going to be when I get older. Like, I know what I'm going to do. Like, mommy, I know what I'm going to do. And I'm like, I'm going to be a rapper. I'm going to make music. Like, I want to do this full time. And thank God I had a very supportive mother. And she's like, if that's what you want to do, then I'll support you. And yeah, she really stood behind that. And I remember she gave me like the classifieds in the of the Village Voice with the studios. And she's like, here's studios, and you know, in Manhattan and stuff, give them a call and, you know, get some information and stuff like that. So that early on, you know, at like 12 years old, that was a lot of, that gave me some extra motivation, like just having my mother's support. And then on top of it, like my mother, she was sick of, unfortunately she passed about a year or so later when I was 13. But I think that kept that fire under me, knowing that she like supported me early on and she saw the passion I had for it. And so when she passed, I did lose inspiration for a couple of years, but then it kind of came back. It really never went away, to be quite honest. Never went away. And so music has been like a very, it's very prominent as like a foundation in my life. You know, it's really a early on foundation. And then, like I told you, I was in high school for international business early on, and you know, like seventh grade, I started. I remember I went to junior high school out in Bayside, Queens, and the area is pretty much, you know, middle class demographic at the time was pretty much like Italian, some Korean families. So it was a small portion of us that were like going. My mother, she did like forbid for me going to the local zone school because she knew like all my friends from the neighborhood were going there. She's like, listen, you didn't spend 6 years with them already. You're going somewhere else. So she made it my business to apply somewhere, and I got accepted to IS-25 out in Bayside. And it was a handful of us. From the projects that were commuting every day. And I remember in my seventh grade class, this was like probably the first few weeks in, we were talking something about business and they got onto stocks. And I remember the kid in my class, my classmate, Andrew Coluccio, hopefully he's doing good. Actually, I saw him a couple years ago. And I remember he said, to the teacher, he said, yeah, my dad bought me stocks for my birthday. And I'm like, fuck is stocks? Like, I was from a totally different world. I had no idea. And it's crazy now. Think about it. I'm like, wow, his dad set him up pretty good. You know, he bought him stocks for his birthday. Hopefully those were like Apple stocks back in 96, you know, or something. But yeah, opened my world up completely, because now I'm like talking to the teacher every day and he's schooling me and he's giving me books on like the stock market and mutual funds and entrepreneurs and being a businessman. So I had a hunger for that, which made me apply for the international business school and on NASS for high school. So it was like the music, and then at the same time it was like my sense of business and having like, okay, I know I have the hustle in me to do it. I just need to figure out like exactly what I want to do. And then that took me on a years of different jobs where I think I said it on the other podcast with Chris, but one of my first very first I'm lying. My first job was like delivering newspapers when I was like 8 years old for like 2 hours, and you get like $20 or something like that. But I, yeah, my first like way of generating money was selling weed, selling pot out here, at like 15, 16 years old, and was actually pretty good at it. The reason I say I was pretty good at it is just I understood having diversity, you know, so and supply and demand, like I just like kind of clicked with me early on. So I was good at it. I had like a high demand and I had exclusive weed at the time. And eventually I ended up giving that up. I remember my good friend's mother, she didn't know we were like selling weed and like just hanging out, like basically doing nothing. She didn't know we was like selling weed and stuff. And I remember she said, you guys are getting older. She came in one day, I think we were like about to turn 17 or 18. And she was like, what are you going to just like smoke weed all day? And I don't know, that kind of triggered us to go get my first official job was McDonald's. So we just smoked all the weed. We had like maybe like a half a pound of weed left. So it was like, we're going to just give up.
Fucking like, Cheech and Chong that shit, man. Deals.
Yeah, we like, yo, for the next week and a half, we're going to just give out like super deals to people and like just smoke the shit.
That's like just, Wiz Khalifa, right?
Yeah, it was like. Yeah. And then we're going to start working at McDonald's. And it was just like, literally, that's how I went. And like, went into McDonald's my first day, like super high. We smoked like a fat blunt of like blueberry, like stupid. I'm in there fucking lost and hungry. It's like hot behind the grill and it's just like, munchy heaven for me, and I'm like, oh shit. So that was like, but that was very humbling because like my first week at McDonald's, I was literally planting flowers in the front, like doing like flower where they didn't even have me like on the grill. I was like outside like doing yard landscaping for McDonald's. So that was very humbling because you see all the cars driving by and people from the neighborhood, they see you and stuff like that. And I was just like, I just kind of owned it. And yeah, from McDonald's to Pathmark for like a couple years, like, yeah, about a year and a half, and then got into construction. And that's really when I kind of started to like spread my wings with it, just like getting out there, meeting different people, and just being in different locations, different areas that I've never really been in before, and that work front. And did that for some time. Man, a lot of jobs. And I'm thinking I'm like from there, I think I did I was a dispatcher for a locksmith company, a national locksmith company. We were like the call center. This is actually, I'm not sure if you're familiar with the Bolivar building over right, it's on the other side of the Grand Central near LaGuardia Airport here in New York. In
yeah, I know exactly. The watch company, right, or jewelry, I can't, Bolivia, whatever it's called. Yeah,
they used to, it was actually back in the days, that's where they made the Bolivar watches and stuff like that. When I was working there, it was just a bunch of different commercial spaces. Actually, we were neighbors to Bernie Madoff at the time of the whole Ponzi scheme, so that was
pretty
crazy
shit.
At that time, yeah, working no in kidding. That building.
Wow.
Yeah, it was literally like Justin, I kid you not, it was one guy that just made sure the office was clean, that was there every day. We would give him beers from our office like on the weekends. We'd be like, hey, you want a beer? Cool Spanish guy, older guy. And about 60 computers, office, everything set up, but no, never anyone in there except for that one guy. So it was like completely a front until it hit the news, and we're like, holy shit, this is really a Ponzi scheme. Nobody's ever in these offices, like, you know.
Yeah, it's the craziest thing that he did. I remember it being over there actually, and wow, I mean, I don't even know how that happens, but it happens, and he's not the only one who's done it, obviously. That's why there's a term for it, but he did make a lot of money, and he did fool a lot of people, particularly in New York City.
Totally. It was scary. They had like the feds in the cars, the patrol cars in front of the building on like 24/7 watch for a couple of weeks there. It was pretty intense. But yeah, I went from that, and then yeah, after the Bolivar, that's when I said, and this is actually my good brother and business partner also, Frank, of Mufasat Industries out in Ghana. I kind of met him somewhere in that time frame, maybe a few years before that, with music. And he kind of put me on, African dude. And I learned early on as a native New Yorker, I said, listen, if you want to like figure out like how to move in New York, I'm like, watch what like the foreigners do, like people that weren't born here and come here. I'm like, they have all the hustle. So I was like learning, watching them. So I'm like, yo, I would see him. He was always chilling. I said, what do you do? He's like, oh, I drive yellow cab. I drive a taxi. So I'm like, teach me how to get the light. How do you get the license? So he basically put me on to that whole process. And from there, I went into driving a yellow cab for about 11 and a half years. And in between that, a lot of my business sense kicked in also, because in the midst of driving the taxi on the side, I was also doing distribution for a lot of mixtape DJs and hip hop DVDs and X-rated DVDs and stuff like, all throughout New York, from Canal Street to 125th Street, 8th Avenue, Jamaica Avenue. So I had to learn how to like actually make a sale. And one of my good friends, he's actually one of my producers early on. Him and another, his business partner, they were making like the X-rated music videos. They had like the uncut music videos, you know, explicit. And they were like, make a cool cover, get a graphic design cover, and then it's like 30 music videos, and you know, people would buy those. They would play, you know, barbers would play them in the barbershops, different things of that nature and stuff like that, lounges and stuff have it, they would play it in the background. So one day he had like a half a box of them, and we were like hanging out at another friend of mine's house, and he's like, He pulled out like a wad of cash, and he's like counting money, and me and my other friend, we're like freaking starving hyenas and shit. Like, we were just like broke. It was like middle of the summer, and like trying to figure it out. And I'm like, yo, bro, like, put us on. And he's like, yo, this is all this money's counted for. He's like, but I do have a box of DVDs, like 30 DVDs. Like, if you could sell it, you could keep it. You know, you keep the money. So I was hungry. I was hungry, and I'm like, yo, something has to give. I remember at the time, and we ended up going down to Fulton Street, downtown Brooklyn, and which is completely different now. It was a lot of like music shops, mixtape shops, and stuff like that back at that time. And I went into the first shop I went into. And it was supposed to be me and another friend of mine, another childhood friend. And I learned that lesson in this. Because we went out together, like, yeah, we're going to sell these. And then I'm like, I'm going to go into this store. And he got distracted. He didn't go with me. He was trying to talk to some girls outside the store. And I went inside the shop, and I showed the guy the DVDs. And he said, how much? I said, I'm very nervous. Like, my voice is like cracking. I'm like, $4, I'm like $4 a piece. And he was like, all right, give me 15. I was like, oh shit. Okay. Oh shit. I wasn't ready. I didn't think it was like, he gave me the $60. And I'm like, oh shit. I just made like $60 in like less than 60 seconds. And that like also like it was a total shift in my perspective there. Then from there, I knew that I could sell something. I knew I can go and make a cold sale, you know, because to go back to like, I was, like I said, I was good with like selling weed, but I felt like the weed sold itself. It's not like, you know, like drugs, like illegal substances. I feel like they kind of sell themselves. You know, you just have to just put yourself in the right arena. But like some things you have to really learn how to like sell and, you know, set yourself up for that. So that was a big turning point. And then I think shortly after that, maybe a month or two later, had some more DVDs. It was like a whole box, like a box 100. And there was a spot, I think it was called Entertainment Outlet. It was down on like 14th Street and 6th Avenue. This is before the internet really blew up. So like this is everyone's going to buy their CDs, the music from this, you know, from the shops or the DVDs and movies and stuff like that. So this was a big spot. They had that location. I think they had another location in Brooklyn. Cool brothers. It was Jewish brothers, cool brothers. And one of them, he gave me a shot. I said, yeah, I got this. Da, da, da. He said, all right, come down. Come check me. Get over here before 12, something like that. I remember I went out early, but I literally left my house and left Flushing with a box of DVDs. Justin, I had, I think your train was $2 at the time. I had $2 to get on the train. I had no way of getting back home. Either I'm going to make the sale or I'm going to be hopping the turnstile back to Queens. And I wasn't trying to do that. So, yeah, I went out there, spoke to gentleman, showed him the DVD, blah, blah, blah. He took the whole box 100 right off of me, right off the bat. And I'm like, holy shit. I just made like freaking 250 in another matter of minutes. And I'm like, I remember it was like early in the afternoon and people like going to lunch. And I'm just like standing around on 14th Street. I'm like, oh shit, I can do this. I you know. So those were like some of the early experiences that just let me know that, okay, I had to kind of cross that threshold. And once I was able to do that, it gave me more confidence moving forward. And then like that just kind of grew with, aside from me like distributing the DVD, also the passion with the music. So now I'm reaching out to the DJs directly. And, you know, I'm like, listen, I want to buy, I'm going to get a box of 100 DVDs. I'm going to get these many mixtapes from you or whatever. But I'm an artist. Can I send you some of my music? Like, can I get my music on the next mixtape? So I started forming relationships with a lot of DJs and a lot of content creators. And also making a way to make some extra ends, pay the bills and stuff like that. So that was... Those are times I really, really cherish. It was tough times, but it really developed my character. And then like kind of fast forward to identify, you know, I told you like how I kind of came across like reconnecting with Chris was Simply Eggless. I was dealing with health issues from, you know, 2011, 2012. And it shifted my whole perspective on food and just how it really corresponds with, you know, what we're eating corresponds with our body and how it reacts and stuff like that. So I, my eye was already like open to like different alternatives on food and stuff like that. So once I saw Chris pouring an omelet of the Simply Eggless on the first Simply Eggless post. And that night I was like, this is great for my refrigerator, but this is also a $1 billion business right here. And how can I get involved with this? Always love food. Always want to find a way to be of service to people. And I know music is definitely one of those avenues. And as an artist, you know, you see a lot of artists, you know, they associate themselves with brands. Normally it's alcohol or clothing. And when I was younger, I felt like, yeah, that's what I would do for that. And it's funny because once I really realized like the position that I was in with Simply Eggless and what I was doing creatively with my music, but also this food revolution that's going on in the world and the food deserts all throughout New York City and just my whole background story, you know, where I come from, where Chris comes from, and us being able to identify that, I was like, wow, I could make music and like sell healthy food alternatives. You know, I could make music and I could, and to, you know, bring in like Mufasad, I could bring coconut oil and coconut byproducts to market in North America. Like, it blew my mind just the opportunities that have come with, because all these things that like I have love for, and I feel like these last few years God has kind of just forced it away for me to like to bring all those things together and say, all right, well, have fun, use your imagination, you know,
figure it out. The tools and the seeds I've given you to grow into something better, you know. Right. I think that's how it works.
So it's like really been a beautiful journey, and it's hard. I'm sure you know, you see me, thank you for like supporting and the shout out with the music. You see me trying to keep a balance of music, food, with Simply Eggless, Mufasad with the coconut oil, and you're starting to see kind of the rollout now, but these are a lot of things I had to kind of sit under the wraps for 6 months to a year and really not tell anybody and just kind of plan in the dark and figure out like, all right, how am I going to approach this? How am I going to do this? Because all these things were new to me. I just knew, all right, you got the balls to do this. You got the balls to step in here. I always said I like to learn like a baby. I don't know anything. I'll start from ground zero, from square one, and then take it step by step by step. And that's brought me success in life, being able to just be humble enough to be like, I don't know. This is foreign to me, but I'm willing to learn. And I'm willing to put the effort in and get out here. So it's been a learning experience for music, food industry, now tapping into commodities and things of that nature. And with the music, I think it's kind of the soundtrack to all this. I can tell the story to you. I'm telling this, you know, telling the story, and it's like the timeline. I'm like, a lot of like the music just captures and just gives you that feeling that, you know, you might not capture just in this having a conversation. It was like, I just remember this time and I was on the 7th train and I was starving and all I had was oodles and noodles in the house or something, you know, like, but to convey, put that into lyrics and put that over music and convey that message, and it resonates with other people where they can relate to it. Like, I feel like I have a talent and a knack for that. And also to spread the message of just like what's going on in the world on so many different levels, in food and international affairs and race relations in the country. So many different things to the tap into. And like the music, yeah, I feel like I'm realizing more and more that that's kind of the soundtrack to the other things, because at one point the music was where I put all my eggs in that basket. At one point I've quit jobs, it is all like, this is it. This is the year. I'm putting this album out. And by the way, I have two solo projects right now. I'm working up to release my third solo project, Bruce is the New Black. I've been working on that for the last couple of years, the last 2-3 years, in the midst of stepping into Simply Eggless, in the midst of stepping into Mufasad. Always making sure like you have to keep that creative vessel open also. So I've been as patient as I can, you know, everything's on God's time. And I say before this year is out that Bruce is the New Black, it will be available on all platforms for people to vibe out to. While we're would you name us the Avengers in the other
Yeah, I did name us the Avengers.
While we're doing the Avengers work, I got some music to bump to, you know, and to go back to, you know, us, you know, hanging out and just like on a personal, that like that night with the Wu-Tang, Jay Perry, he spun at the restaurant at the Japanese Brasserie, and we got to vibe out to Wu-Tang. Like, it was just a testament there of just seeing how music can just bring so many different cultures, so many different people from different walks of lives together, you know. And everyone has their own experience. I'm sure you have your own stories of Wu-Tang when you were younger, and Chris, and, you know, Miles, and even the DJ J period and stuff like that. But to experience that, and you see the culture of what the importance of the music, that I feel like that night really showed me the importance of music and how it captures and brings people together, you know. And I'm like, all right, you have a talent, you have kind of an obligation to give it your best, you know. So that's what I try to do. When you see me posting up the freestyles and videos and stuff like that, I'm like, I have to keep talking to the people, because I would say you know you've met me, we've hung out, you know. I'll speak, but I'm also kind of reserved and introverted at some points, you know. I think the music is where it brings more of the extrovert out in me, you know.
I agree with you. It's the same for me. Like, once I get behind a microphone, or I start publicly speaking, or I do a keynote speaker, or I'm on someone else's podcast, it brings the extrovert out of me, because stereotypically I'm introverted. I'm very to myself. I'm very quiet. I can isolate pretty easily. I'm very efficient at working on my own, and being motivating myself and inspiring myself. I really don't need it from outside sources. I discipline in my own routines, but I've really got to force myself to go out and be, you know, like, I'm one of the greatest networkers. I don't know how, but I just network people all over the place. But it's very hard, and something I've had to work on, because I've never always felt comfortable with people or audiences, or I would call it even maybe a little bit of social anxiety, for lack of a better term. And, you know, I agree with you on that, Bruce, completely.
And I have to say, yes, you are a hell of a networker. You're a hell of a networker.
Yeah, I don't know. It's one of my superpowers. Who would have ever thought? I didn't see that one coming, for sure.
No, it's beautiful to bring people together, and you know, that's a lot of people. Yeah, it's not, a lot of people don't know how to even come out the shell to even do that, you know. So I commend you on that, and you know, thank you for always just, you know, creating a network and trying to connect like minds together, you know.
I agree. So, Bruce, where can they find you online? Where can they find your music? How do they look you up on Instagram, or maybe you're on Threads already? How do they find you?
Thank you. Yeah, you could find me on, right now, my single "Feel My Pain" is up on Spotify, all music platforms. Bruce David, two first names. Rap name, real name, same thing. yeah, Bruce David, D-A-V-I-D. You could find me on Instagram at bdavidofficial. And those are pretty much, and then also YouTube, Bruce David Official. But if you go to my Instagram, it'll pretty much link you to everything. And I actually have to get like the LinkedIn, so I can really get people from every angle, every platform. But yeah, you go to my Instagram, Bruce David, B David Official, you can find me, and then join the journey, join the experience.
I love this. If you guys want to find me, you can find me at Justin Bizarro, again, BIZZARRO on Facebook, Threads, and Instagram. You can also find this show on Spotify or wherever else you grow yourself through podcasts, or any of the other shows we do. Thank you, Bruce, for your time. I'm definitely going to have you on for a part two. I got a lot of questions, but I think like we covered so much there, and I think we're going to cover a lot more as we sort of dive into some details in business and you start growing your businesses, and Simply Eggless continues to take off the way that it does. So I just wanted to say thank you for coming on the show. I appreciate you. I appreciate you as a friend, all the support, you know, the rooting for me. I'm definitely rooting for you big time, and supporter of yours. And, you know, it means a lot.
That's what we have to do.
That's what we have to do.
We got to support each other, you know.
Absolutely.
Yeah, thank you for the time and the platform. I really appreciate you, bro.
Yeah, you're welcome. And thank you, everyone, for listening in. If you like the show, continue to share it. Give it good comments. If you like Bruce, or you're a fan of Bruce's, give him a good comment. The algorithm works, guys. Like, the more you comment, the more you give it 5 stars for this particular episode, the better the show does, but really the better the episode does and Bruce's story gets out there. So thank you everyone for listening in again, and we're out.